Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 508, titled The Vatican Rag, Part 2, Der Panzer Kardinal, being recorded on April 24th of the year 2005. We're going to plunge right in, and we're going to resume with our accounting of the history of Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict the 16th. In the conclusion of Side 2, we took a look at the fact that one of the key people in the rise of Cardinal Ratzinger was Pope Paul VI, nay Giovanni Battista Montini. He was the single most important Vatican figure involved with Father Draganovich, about whom we're going to speak in a minute, and the Rat Line, the Vatican escape network for Nazi war criminals that was in turn inextricably linked with some of the machinations by elements of U.S. intelligence to bring some of these Nazis into the Western sway at the end of World War II. And in turn, the Rat Lines and their related networks were associated with money laundering on behalf of the Third Reich. And it was Pope Paul VI, nay Giovanni Battista Montini, who was in failing health and at the end of his life in 1977, who elevated Cardinal Ratzinger first to be Archbishop of Munich and then Cardinal 3 months later. And it was in that same period that he hooked up with Pope John, the guy who was later to become Pope John Paul II, Karol Wojtyla, with whom he remained very, very close throughout the course of the latter's papacy. Now recall, Pope John Paul I was moving to clean out the P2 Nexus, Archbishop Marcinkus, Michele Sindona, and Roberto Calvi, and the whole stinking crew that had wrapped itself around the Vatican's finances since the pre-World War II period, and that was in all probability the reason why John Paul I lasted all of 28 days. Unfortunately, the documentation for the probable murder of JP1 is not available in the For the Record shows. However, contact Spitfire RFA-18 goes into that at great length. So again, noting that it was Pope Paul VI who, at the end of his life in 77, was one of the people most responsible for the rise of Joseph Ratzinger. Note also that right at the time that Joseph Ratzinger became Benedict XVI, once again, that whole P2 cesspool bubbled up once again with the indictment of four people for the murder of Roberto Calvi, the fellow who succeeded Michele Sindona, a fellow P2 member, as Vatican financial advisor, and Michele Sindona was murdered as well. We would note again that in all probability those four relatively low-level mafiosi were, it would appear that they are basically being tossed to the wolves, and if one gets into the power politics surrounding the P2, one gets into some very, very powerful elements indeed, including Licio Gelli, a man with more connections than a switchboard, as I like to say, honored guest at Ronald Reagan's inauguration, devotee of Mussolini, and a truly interesting individual indeed. There was even an American functionary of the P2, Philip Guarino, who was part of the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization until he passed away in the early 1990s. What we're going to take a look at next is yet another piece of information suggesting that the portrayal of Joseph Ratzinger as an anti-Nazi is, at best, shall we say, less than candid. We're going to turn now to the association. Another of the key people in Joseph Ratzinger's rise to the church was Cardinal Joseph Frings, the Archbishop of Cologne in Germany. We're going to take a look at a piece of an article titled A Theological Visionary with Roots in Wartime Germany. This is from the New York Times of April 20th of 2005. It's a story by Daniel J. Wakin, Dateline Rome, April 19th. And of the pivotal association between Joseph Frings and Cardinal Ratzinger, then Father Ratzinger, this association was one of the things that boosted Joseph Ratzinger to the highest levels of the church. Already in 1962 at 35, he achieved prominence at the highest levels of the church. A mutual acquaintance introduced him to Cardinal Joseph Frings, Archbishop of Cologne. Cardinal Frings, F-R-I-N-G-S, asked him to serve as his expert assistant at the Second Vatican Council. And what we're going to look at now, some of the other activities that Joseph Frings was involved with. We're going to turn for our next item to one of the most important books ever written about fascism, a must-read for anyone who wants to know about this pivotal element of 20th and 21st century politics. That book is Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey and the Post-War Fascist International. It was authored by the brilliant Kevin Coogan and published in soft cover by the Otano Media. And the full annotation for the, the ISBN number, etc., will be in the description for this program. Now, one of the things that Kevin Coogan has noted is that some of the networks that were aiding Nazi war criminals, both helping them to escape and pushing for their early release, were associated with a number of interesting people who basically served as fronts for these Nazi war criminal assistance networks. We're going to hear about a couple of women, Princess Eisenberg and Countess Faber-Castell, who were described by a former SS officer, who was codenamed Kluf by the State Department. And in turn, we're going to hear about some of these networks that were assisting Nazi war criminals. And in particular, we're going to hear about the role of Cardinal Joseph Frings, mentor to Joseph Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict XVI, and his association with a couple of these front organizations, and in particular, something called the Committee for Justice and Trade. And listen very carefully to the Committee for Justice and Trade, and veteran listeners to this program, I think, will be able to place the item I'm about to discuss right in the context in which it belongs. Turning to Dreamer of the Day by Kevin Coogan. But what exactly was the larger organization mentioned by Kluf that both Princess Eisenberg and Countess Faber-Castell were said to be involved with? In June of 1958, 3 years after Germany had regained its full sovereignty, some answers were provided by the rightist journal Deutsche Soldatenzeitung. It was here that Major General Hans Korte published a lengthy article describing an underground, quote, resistance, unquote, network that had the active support of both women. By the way, resistance is to resistance to occupation of Germany by the Allies. Continuing. Korte reported that in 1948, a group of jurists who had served in Nuremberg as defense counsels for major war criminals created a steering committee in Munich to attack the legality of the war crimes process. Two of the lawyers were Rudolf Aschenauer and Ernst Achenbach. A number of fronts or sub-agencies were then created, including the Andere-Seite and the Committee for Christian Aid to War Prisoners, whose sponsors included Cardinal Joseph Frings of Cologne, parenthetically Ratzinger's mentor, and Bishop Johann Neuhäusler of Munich. The Roman Catholic Caritas organization and the Protestant Evangelisches Hilfswerk all became involved as well. Now listen very closely to the next item. Again, I'm speaking of Cardinal Frings, Joseph Ratzinger's mentor. Cardinal Frings and a Stuttgart Protestant cleric named Theophil Wurm ran an organization called the Committee for Justice and Trade that had a mysterious bank account, Konto Gustav, into which over 60 unidentified leaders of German big business had deposited large sums. According to the Deutsche Soldatenzeitung, the Committee for Justice and Trade was closely affiliated with a propaganda center in Switzerland called Centro Europa that carried out a worldwide campaign for the early release of jailed German war criminals. Another branch of the operation, Princess Eisenberg's Stille Hilfe, directed its propaganda and fundraising to members of high society in the old aristocracy, as did Helfende Hände, or Helping Hands, a similar charity directed by Princess Stephanie zu Schaumburg-Lippe. More support came from Otto Skorzeny's Kameradenhilfe, the Rudel Club, and various German, quote, relief, unquote, propaganda and fundraising circles inside the United States. So again, noting one of the groups fronted for by Cardinal Frings, Joseph Ratzinger's mentor, that once again, Cardinal Frings and a Stuttgart Protestant cleric named Theophil Wurm ran an organization called the Committee for Justice and Trade that had a mysterious bank account, Konto Gustav, into which over 60 unidentified leaders of German big business had deposited large sums. And that went to finance a propaganda center. Can you say Bormann, boys and girls? there was a remarkable degree of synchronicity with the appointment of Josef Ratzinger on Tuesday, April 19th. Not only did the LA Times carry the story of four men being indicted for the murder of Roberto Calvi, the Vatican financial advisor who succeeded the murdered Michele Sindona. Sindona, by the way, wasn't murdered till 86 till he was extradited to Italy. But that very same day, April 19th, a very important story broke. The following is from the San Francisco Chronicle, again, of Tuesday, April 19th of 2005. Article by Bob Ejelko, E-G-E-L-K-O. Court revives suit against Vatican Bank, subtitled Claim Alleges Church Held Money Looted by Croatian Nazis. This reads in part as follows. And once again, this places not only the Vatican Bank, but its association with fascist collaborationist regimes, in particular the wartime Croatian fascists, the Ustaši, and in turn, people who were involved with the Ustaši, such as Father Draganovic, whom we're going to talk about, Archbishop Stepanak, and others, helped to set up the infamous Vatican Rat Line, which helped many of the top Nazi war criminals to escape, some to Latin America, some to the U.S., to work in conjunction with U.S. intelligence. Again, from the Chronicle of April 19th, court revives suit against Vatican Bank, we read the following. A federal appeals court stepped into the controversy over the Catholic Church's relations with Nazi regimes during World War II on Monday, reinstating a lawsuit by Holocaust survivors against the Vatican Bank for allegedly profiting from property looted by the Ustaši puppet government in Croatia. Skipping down. The Ustaša took power in Croatia after the German invasion in 1941 and established death camps in which as many as 700,000 people, mostly Serbs, were killed, according to a U.S. government report cited by the court. A separate State Department report said Ustaša leaders found sanctuary in a papal institution in Rome after the war with a treasury of over $80 million. The suit claims much of the money had been stolen from Serbs, Jews, Gypsies, Ukrainians, and others under Ustaša domination, and was kept in the Vatican Bank, where it was used in part to finance the relocation of Nazi fugitives. The plaintiffs, who seek class action status on behalf of all those affected, want restitution of their losses and any profits gained by the bank. Again, note not only that the brutal Ustaša regime was aided by the Vatican and that many of these people were subsequently provided with refuge by the Vatican, something that's well documented, by the way, but that also the funds that they had were used to finance the escape of Nazi fugitives. Not only does this, along with the Roberto Calvi story, place the Vatican Bank front and center at the time that Josef Ratzinger became Benedict XVI, but once again, the Vatican Bank's collaboration with fascism is front and center, and the networks and this whole cesspool going back to the World War II and post-World War II period, well, what was old becomes new again. We're going to turn once again to one of the books that we heard in the excerpt from For the Record 504 in Side 1. That book is Unholy Trinity by Mark Ahrens and John Loftus. And we're going to hear about the Vatican Rat Line. Now, some of the names here. First of all, Father Draganovic. He was the main Croatian priest associated with the Vatican Rat Line. You're also going to hear a reference to Ante Pavlic. He was the so-called Poglavnik, the Führer of wartime Croatia. And later on, you're going to hear about Archbishop Stepanak, who was one of the mentors to, one of the people who was able to effect the formation of Draganovic's Rat Line. And once again, not only the use of these Vatican networks to aid the escape of Nazi war criminals, but also the use of the loot that was taken from Croatia to finance these activities is front and center, and that is what was the focal point of the lawsuit that was reinstated the day before Ratzinger became Benedict XVI. And as we've seen, Ratzinger himself is associated with people such as Cardinal Frings and Montini, later Pope Paul VI, people who were principals involved with these Vatican Nazi war criminal escape and assistance networks. Turning now to Unholy Trinity by John Loftus and Mark Ahrens, we read, with the help of Catholic priests, Pavlich had begun to transfer large quantities of gold and currency to Switzerland in early 1944. Some of the treasure had been taken to Italy by British Lieutenant Colonel Johnson to finance the Chrysari forces. By the way, the Chrysari were immediate post-World War II they were supposed to be anti-communist guerrillas, but really what they were terrorists. But they were financed by some of the loot that was taken from the Vatican, and they're taken from Croatia, I should say, and they worked with the Vatican, as well as elements of British and later U.S. intelligence. Turning now once again to resuming with our narrative. Some of the treasure, that's the Croatian treasure from World War II, the Ustasha treasure, some of the treasure had been taken to Italy by British Lieutenant Colonel Johnson to finance the Chrysari forces. Another portion went to Rome with Father Draganovich and also ended up financing the terrorist network. But over 2,400 kilos of gold and other valuables remained secreted in Bern. It was supposed to be used to, quote, aid refugees of the Catholic religion, unquote, but was really earmarked for the Ustashi's clandestine operations. Although the Allies had temporarily prevented them from gaining access to these funds, by early 1948 the time had come to use the church to retrieve the loot. In Bern, Rosemann's Ustashi friends were engaged in wholesale fraud using the black market to convert the gold into dollars and later into Austrian shillings. Aid to the refugees is accounted for at the official rate of exchange for dollars, unquote, the American officers noted, adding that malpractices have been carried on. Officially, the dollar is worth 10 shillings on the black market, 100 to 150. According to reliable information, Rosemann is going to Bern to take care of these finances. The money is in a Swiss bank, and he plans to have most of it sent through to Italy and from there to the Ustashis in the Argentine, unquote. A short time later, Rosemann duly arrived in Bern, accompanied by Bishop Ivan Saric, the hangman of Sarajevo. By the end of May 1948, Rosemann had apparently carried out this money laundering operation for the Ustashi, for he visited the U.S. consulate in Zurich and was given a non-quota immigration visa as a minister of religion, unquote. He then traveled to the United States and settled in Cleveland, Ohio. The circle was now almost complete. Pavlich's stolen treasure had been tracked down through the close monitoring of the movements and activities of the Quisling Bishop of Ljubljana. And still more about the rat line and the Chrysari forces and the use of the Vatican Bank to effect some of these machinations that were the focal point of that suit. William Gowan and his counterintelligence corps colleagues had started to unravel Britain's role in the Chrysari's operation during their hunt for Ante Pavlich in 1947. As already discussed, they soon discovered that the Vatican was sheltering Pavlich with the connivance of the British Secret Intelligence Service. In the course of establishing this, Gowan also confirmed sensational claims made by Ferenc Vajda. It will be recalled that the American's Hungarian Nazi contact had told him that SIS was behind the military and political revival of the Ustashi. Gowan investigated the Chrysari's finances and soon uncovered the unsavory truth. Their money came partly from the treasure which Pavlich's henchmen had carried out of Croatia. According to Gowan, the Ustashi had fled with a large number of truckloads of this stolen booty. When the British SIS apprehended Pavlich in Austria in May of 1945, they also picked up some of his loot. Gowan believed that the following story of what really happened was closest to the truth. Quote, British Lieutenant Colonel Johnson was placed in charge of two trucks laden with the supposed property of the Catholic Church in the British zone of Austria. These two trucks, accompanied by a number of priests and a British officer, then entered Italy and went to an unknown destination, unquote. Major Stephen Kleesold confirmed that two such Ustashi treasure trucks had indeed reached Austria. Not surprisingly, Kleesold did not mention the British role in removing them to Italy, claiming instead that they, quote, were deposited in the safekeeping of a monastery, unquote. Perhaps the treasure had been in a monastery, but Gowan was certain that the British were now using it to finance, quote, the Croat resistance movement in Yugoslavia. The resistance forces go by the name of Chrysari or Crusaders. Radio contact is maintained by means of a field radio operated by Vrančić, a former Pavlich minister located in the British zone of Austria. The Ustasha courier service within the Austrian zones is believed aided by the Roman Catholic Church in Austria. The Cardinal of Graz is known to be on close terms with Professor Draganovich Krunoslav, known as Pavlich's contact in Rome. Father Krunoslav Draganovich, by the way, was the patron, the main man of the Vatican rat line. Yet again, Western intelligence found that Father Draganovich was at the center of the Ustashi's clandestine activities. Indeed, he was widely known in Western intelligence and emigre circles as, quote, the golden priest, unquote, because he controlled a large part of the stolen treasure. Although Colonel Johnson had taken away two truckloads in 1945, this was only a fraction of Pavlich's loot. 400 kilos of gold worth millions of dollars and a considerable amount of foreign currency had been secreted at Wolfsberg, where it was under the control of former Ustashi minister Lovro Susic. Draganovich discovered this from senior Ustashi officials during his visit to Austria in mid-1945. They were apparently determined to maintain some independence from the British, who they feared would seize the gold, so they asked Draganovich to save it. The priest was only too willing to oblige, for he contacted Susic and with his agreement took 40 kilos of gold bars to Rome concealed in two packing cases. There is no doubt about Draganovich's close connections with the Ustashi hierarchy in this money laundering scheme. So once again, the day before Ratzinger became Benedict XVI, the rat lines, the Ustashi treasure, the use of this treasure not only for post-war guerrilla activities but to aid Nazi fugitives was once again, like the Vatican banking scandals, front and center. What we're going to hear about next is the role of Archbishop Stepanak, who was a member of the Ustashi Parliament, in helping to maneuver Krunoslav Draganovich into a position vis-a-vis the Vatican, which in turn would enable him to realize, to actualize the rat lines. Turning once again to Unholy Trinity by Loftus and Ahrens. Draganovich had returned to Rome in August of 1943, representing the Ustashi and the Croatian Red Cross. This allowed him to build his escape routes for Nazi war criminals. He was supported by Croatia's Archbishop, Alois Stepanak, who had provided Draganovich with introductions to influential Vatican contacts. As a result, he could move in the highest circles, meeting regularly with Secretary of State Maglione and even with Pope Pius XII. He also had close contacts with Axis diplomats at the Vatican, which would later prove invaluable. Still more about the role of Archbishop Stepanak in assisting Draganovich. In another striking parallel with Cecilia's career, Draganovich also worked on Croatian Red Cross matters. In August 1943, Pavlich and Archbishop Stepanak dispatched him to Rome. American intelligence observed that it was, quote, a classic example of kicking a man upstairs, unquote, inasmuch as it is fairly well established that the leaders of the independent state of Croatia expected the prelate, through his good connections in the Vatican, to be instrumental in working out the orientation of Croatia towards the West rather than the East. Now, noting again the continuity between JP2 and Josef Ratzinger, we want to note that one of the many things that JP2 did was to beatify Archbishop Stepanak. This is from the Vision website, Foundation for a New World. There are a lot of references to this on the Internet, and I will list the URL in the description for the show. Removing the politics from sainthood. Pope John Paul II has created a record number of saints during the 22 years he has reigned as head of the Catholic Church. Skipping down, often his choices have been controversial and viewed as political statements. In 1998, his decision to beatify the Croatian Cardinal Alois Stepanak received much criticism from Orthodox Serbs and Jews. Stepanak was Archbishop of Zagreb during World War II and afterwards was accused of collaborating with the Nazis in their massacre of Serbs, Jews, and Gypsies in Croatia. In 1992, he beatified José María Escrivá, the Spanish founder of the ultra-conservative Opus Dei, a movement widely viewed with suspicion as a secret society. Opus Dei, by the way, had very strong fascist connections, not only to Francisco Franco, but de Balaguer, the father of Escrivá, had openly praised Adolf Hitler. And there are indications that the Opus Dei group may have had a lot to do with the elevation of Josef Ratzinger. L.A. Times, April 19, 2005, Larry Stammer and Tracy Wilkinson. Controversial Opus Dei has stake in papal vote. It talks about that, but due to the limitations of time, I'm not going to read that. It will be in the description to this broadcast. A couple of more items about Josef Ratzinger. This from New York Newsday of April 21st of 2005. Neil Bush and Ratzinger, co-founders. Dateline Washington, Neil Bush, the president's controversial younger brother, 6 years ago joined the cardinal, who this week became Pope Benedict XVI, as a founding board member of a little-known Swiss ecumenical foundation. The charter members of the board were all well-known international religious figures except for Bush and his close friend and business partner, Jamal Daniel, whose family has extensive holdings in the United States and Switzerland, public records show. The Foundation for Interreligious and Intercultural Research and Dialogue was founded in Geneva, Switzerland in 1999 to promote ecumenical understanding and publish original religious texts, said a foundation official. Well, I've never seen anything discussing Neil Bush's religious, let alone ecumenical connections. Jamal Daniel is a very, very close friend of Bush and a business partner of Bush, and he also was discussed in For the Record 438. Jamal Daniel's family were among the founders of the Ba'ath Party in both Iraq and Syria. And the current pope is not known for ecumenism. In fact, he was behind a cyclical which made it clear that only Roman Catholicism was the vehicle to salvation. But again, Jamal Daniel's family, along were some of the, he's a business partner, a friend of Bush, were and a participant in this ecumenical organization, along with Ratzinger, were among the founders of the Ba'ath Party in Iraq and Syria. That, folks, is what I call ecumenism. Another item here about Ratzinger, new pope intervened against Kerry in U.S. 2004 election campaign. German Cardinal Josef Ratzinger, the Vatican theologian who was elected Pope Benedict XVI, intervened in the 2004 U.S. election campaign, ordering bishops to deny communion to abortion rights supporters, including presidential candidate John Kerry. In a June 2004 letter to U.S. bishops enunciating principles of worthiness for communion recipients, Ratzinger specified that strong and open supporters of abortion should be denied the Catholic sacrament for being guilty of a grave sin, unquote. So again, a little bit of the history of Benedict XVI, nay, Josef Ratzinger, Der Panzer Kardinal. I would also note that he was the principal individual involved with overseeing the, quote, investigation, unquote, of the Vatican abuse scandals. One wonders to what extent his position of primacy in the, quote, investigation, read, cover-up, of the abuse scandals may have given him hard inside leverage in order to maneuver his way into the papacy. Perhaps there were some skeletons, so to speak, in some various closets. There are a lot of things. It's also interesting that Silvio Berlusconi resigned as Italian Prime Minister at the same time. A lot of things going on, and we'll reflect on those in the description, but we are all out of time in this broadcast. Remember, sister station WFMU, archiving the For the Record shows on Real Audio and MP3, podcasting the For the Record shows, and the vitally important Spitfire website, www.spitfirelist.com, with more material than anyone could probably use in a lifetime at this point. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record Program 508, The Vatican Rag, Part 2, Der Panzer Kardinal, being recorded on April 24th of the year 2005. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.